What a day for Steve Hallstrom to take a day off. What a news day we have had here in the state of North Dakota and also nationwide and worldwide, really. It's been a busy day, and hope to catch you up on some of what's happening. If you've been at work all day or not following the news, there has been some pretty big headlines. One of those national headlines that we're going to talk a little bit about is a watershed moment at the United States Supreme Court. Dealing with a huge issue, and that is gender transition procedures. We're going to get into that a little bit later on in the show. But another big day in the state of North Dakota in that Governor Burgum did give his state budget address. And I'm telling you, I'm excited about a few things. I thought he did an incredible job, was able to listen to most of it. And we're going to cover a few things that Governor Burgum proposed today for the state of North Dakota to deal with and to handle. Also want to get into a couple of articles that I found fascinating and in some ways staggering, and hope to spark our minds to think a little bit more critically about the times that we live in. It's great to be with you here on this Wednesday afternoon. This is Andrew Sletten sitting in for Steve again this afternoon. And I mentioned, if you're tuning in to hear Steve and his response to the news of the day, I know you're disappointed. I'm disappointed, but we're going to try to tackle some of these issues today. We're going to get right into it with Governor Burgum in the state of North Dakota in his budget address. I found it fascinating. And again, I thought he did a great job, but I found it fascinating how he has laid out again the really condition of our state in the state of our budget, state of our finances. We are an incredibly blessed state. And I have a couple of audio clips I'm going to play for you. But one of them, cut number one, Addison, it just is Governor Burgum talking about the budget forecast and where we are as a state and what the legislature coming up here in January is going to deal with. It's really, as he says here, it's a time of true abundance. So let's do cut number one, Addison.
Today, as we gather, our reserve funds are full and continue to grow to record levels. Our revenues for the biennium ending June 30th, 2025 are 11%, or $392 million ahead of forecast. Our ag and energy sectors, which form the bedrock of our economy, are strong, more diversified than ever. Yes, this is a time. This is a time of true abundance in North Dakota. And you, as members of the 69th legislature, when you convene, you're facing perhaps the greatest levels of economic opportunity ever presented to any prior assembly in our state's 135-year history. So it's my distinct honor to present to you one last time the executive budget for 2025 and 2027 biennium.
You could hear Governor Burgum getting a little emotional there at the end. Of course, his last budget address to the legislature. But, I mean, those numbers are staggering. When I hear this, I think of this. I have this word picture in my mind. I think of Scrooge McDuck, if you are familiar with those comics from back in the day, sitting on his mountain of money. I feel like that is the state of North Dakota, is sitting on a mountain of money. Our reserves are full. And I think he did a great job of presenting that we are in a time of great abundance. And I think the biblical principle applies here: to whom much is given, much is required. And that applies to this legislature. But as I was listening to the address, I was just thrilled at what I heard kind of midway through the address. And we're going to deal with this and talk about this topic for kind of the rest of the 4 o'clock hour. But that topic I've talked about before on the show, and I know Steve has as well, is the topic of school choice. Governor Burgum, if you remember the last legislative session, he vetoed a bill that would have provided some school choice options, and many were disappointed in that veto, and he at that time said that the bill didn't go far enough to see what he felt would have been life-changing school choice options for the state of North Dakota. And many of us were, again, disappointed, but you know, we took him at his word, and here he is today telling us this. Cut number two, Addison. This is the school choice budget proposal that Governor Burgum just gave to the legislators here today in Bismarck.
But whether it's in education, software, or business world in general, we know that competition is good. It forces competitors to constantly improve their products, measure their outcomes, or risk losing your customers to someone who's doing it better, faster, and cheaper. We continually hear that parents want more choice in education, which in North Dakota is largely a captive market, particularly in rural areas. In response to these market demands, our budget proposes $50 million for educational savings account, ESAs, on top of the publicly funded K-12 education system I've already described. During our last interim, legislators and stakeholders discussed ways to expand educational opportunities and provide more choice to students and student families. That debate, I know, will continue again in this session. But our administration, along with you, we've also advocated for school choice. I know that there's ideas that are coming around public charters. You should pay close attention to that. This ESA program, which is in our budget, would provide families with a menu of approved options to access direct services that expand learning, support areas of academic need, provide behavioral health program, and other pre-approved choices. So if you've got a low-income family and they can't afford the art fee, the band fee, they can't afford to go on a school trip, you've got your ESA funding, and you can. Every student in the state could take funds out of that if it was on the approved list and say, I can participate in this. If you have a child like we did that was identified with a dyslexia and you need a specialized reading program, you go to your ESA fund and you can use that. So this goes to the student, not to the institution. This goes to the student, the family, the parents can choose how to use these dollars for pre-approved list of educational things. These are coming across the country. This would be an exciting differentiator. I think it could even help us recruit people to come to North Dakota. But this is about ensuring that every student has what they need to support a pathway for them that will take them either to a career, a college, or to military readiness.
This is about what every student needs to make a pathway to get them to where they need to be. What tremendous insight, I believe, from Governor Burgum. And I applaud him for taking the time in his budget address to deal with this topic. And coming up on the other side of the break, we're going to have a conversation with Corey DeAngelis. And Corey is a nationwide advocate, affectionately known as a school choice evangelist. But Corey has been involved in many states over the last couple of years in helping states pass some incredible school choice legislation. And I'd interacted with him a little bit over Twitter today and was able to get him on the program. You're going to want to hang around for this conversation coming up with Corey DeAngelis. He is the executive director of the Educational Freedom Institute on the other side of the break. Stick with us. Welcome back, everybody, to this dreary winter afternoon. It definitely feels like winter out there, Addison, doesn't it?
You're calling it dreary outside? I mean, I feel like dreary is the term you use for like a, I don't know, like a light misting maybe. Or
right.
That's not.
Right. You should have seen the snowflakes falling at my office today. I mean, they were the size of silver dollars, but it's.
I don't think I would have been able to see anything with the, how many of them would have been going directly
yeah, right.
in my eyes.
That's right. Welcome, everybody, to the Steve Hallstrom Show. This is Andrew Sletten sitting in for Steve this afternoon and looking forward to this conversation with Corey DeAngelis. Corey is the executive director of the Educational Freedom Institute, and he is also the author of a book, The Parent Revolution. And Corey has been a leading voice in the school choice discussion nationwide, helping a lot of states get to a place where they can pass some just incredible, and I would say it, life-changing legislation for students all across the United States. And it really is an honor to have Corey on the program today. Corey, thank you for taking some time.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Absolutely, absolutely. There is, in the state of North Dakota, some pretty big news that came out today in Governor Burgum's budget address, and would love to get some of your reaction to what Governor Burgum had to say today, if you had a chance to listen to it, in regards to school choice. It's a big deal for the state of North Dakota, something that I personally have been working on, advocating for the last 4 years. And what's your initial reaction to what Governor Burgum had to say today?
Yeah, I'm optimistic that it's going to get across the finish line, because last year there was a similar school choice bill that actually made it to Doug Burgum's desk. And now he's calling for education savings accounts. This is the gold standard of school choice policy. For people not familiar, for listeners, it's the money that would have followed you to the government-run school. You could still take it there if you want. A fraction of that you could, if you want to choose something else, would go to a parent-directed education savings account, kind of like in a health savings account. You can only use it for health expenses. This would only be allowed for education expenses. It's the purest form of the idea of the money following the child. And we have this in several other states. Over a dozen states now have education savings accounts. Red states are going all in on school choice, especially after the school closures that happened in 2020 with the COVID era. Families saw there was some curriculum that wasn't aligned with their values, and so they pushed back at school board meetings. They were called domestic terrorists by the Biden administration. That didn't work out too well. So they started to push for school choice. A dozen red states now have universal school choice, which is what Doug Burgum called for today. It's everybody. No more picking winners and losers. Everyone, regardless of income, background, zip code, would be able to take their kids' taxpayer-funded education dollars that we're already spending, by the way. It would follow them to the school that works best for them. That could be another public school. It could be a private school. If you don't have many of those options in your area, it also allows for you to use the funding for micro schools, which a lot of people were doing during the COVID era as well, where the public schools were closed in some places and families started to band together in the home to create these miniature schools with 5 to 10 children together. This is more likely to be doable in rural areas. If you don't have a private school, you might be able to create some type of homeschool co-op or home-based learning option. And education savings accounts can be used for home-based education expenses, including homeschool curriculum, private tutors, and so on and so forth. So this was also a big announcement today for me, because last year the reason the school choice bill didn't get enacted was because Doug Burgum actually vetoed it. I called him out about this last year. I was not very happy about it myself. But I did read his veto message, and he did say last year the reason he vetoed it was because, quote, he said it didn't go far enough, that he supports school choice. Right. He wanted a bolder initiative. And I didn't believe him at the time. I thought he was just trying to have his cake and eat it too, call himself a conservative while also blocking a conservative policy and siding with the status quo and the teachers unions. But no, it looks like he's standing by his word, and he is promoting a type of school choice that I would argue is better than the bill that was proposed last year. Again, I haven't seen the bill yet, but just him using the words of being available for everyone and the specific policy of education savings accounts, that's good news. And we have the votes in both chambers in North Dakota. So North Dakota is one of the only two states in the country that doesn't have any school choice in the form of either charter schools or private school choice programs like savings, the ESAs or the scholarship programs. North Dakota doesn't have any. And so mm-hmm. this is a big move nationally as well.
This is a big deal. You had mentioned red states going all in on school choice. And I know that Governor Noem, just in South Dakota, in her budget address, introduced also ESAs to the state. And I know this is early on in the process here in North Dakota, but it's a big deal. I guess for those of us who have been advocating for this for quite a few years, for Governor Burgum to come out and spend the time that he did on this, I think is a huge win to the school choice conversation. But if we had to model, and obviously we're going to go into this legislative session in January, Corey, I hope that you can be involved in some way in this with our legislators and whatever we as citizens can do to make our voice heard. Please instruct us in that way as well. But, you know, the Heritage Foundation ranks North Dakota number 41 for educational freedom. And you had mentioned we're just one of two states that don't have any choice options. I mean, ESAs are the gold standard. I think we would agree. But what state would you say has the model that you have found working nationwide that North Dakota should go after?
I think Arizona, hands down. Arizona has universal education savings accounts. They've been doing this for over a decade. And they have about 80,000 or so families already signed up since they expanded it to everybody in 2022. So they actually crashed their government website when they first opened the application window because so many families wanted to be able to direct the funding to the provider that works best for them. At the time, I didn't know if it was because it was a government website, and maybe that's why it crashed. But we found the numbers later on, and it's actually because there was such high demand. And that's really demonstrates success of a program. People want to use it, and they continue using it. That shows that they're happy with it. But the specifics on Arizona, one, everybody is eligible. So there's no, for decades, the school choice movement had been picking winners and losers, I call it. They were doing it just for certain kids. Maybe if you had a special need, then you get to qualify. Or maybe if you're the lowest income in the area, then you get to qualify. Or maybe if you're assigned to an F-rated school, then you get to qualify. I mean, we've simplified it in more recent years, and we've made it more, there's more equality, I would say, in that we already fund the public education for everyone, regardless of your background. We shouldn't discriminate on the basis of anything when it comes to school choice programs either. And so now we've gone from 0 to 100 on the issue, in that it's now the barometer of success is whether everybody is eligible. So I think that is key. And Arizona also doesn't cap it in the budget. So I will say Governor Burgum today did point out, he said a lot of good things. He said, competition is important in education, which the public schools in places like Arizona, Florida that have school choice, their outcomes have gotten better in response to choice, because when families can vote with their feet, the schools start to direct more money into the classroom as opposed to towards administrative bloat and wasteful expenditures. The teachers actually end up with higher salaries too, and the outcomes get better in the public schools as well. But Governor Burgum today did mention it would be a $50 million appropriation. I think that's a pretty sizable amount. I think it's a good start for the state of North Dakota. But in Arizona, they don't have like a number that they set aside. It's funded through the education funding formula. And so if everybody wanted to use school choice, they could in Arizona. But in other states, like in Utah, for example, they had a universal program, everybody eligible, but they first passed it with only 5,000 scholarships available. And so what happened in Utah, everybody applied, kind of like we saw within Arizona, and there was like, they had like 10,000 kids on wait lists to get scholarships. So they were, in theory, available to everybody, but it was so many people wanted it that it wasn't actually available to everybody. So in Arizona, they don't play those games, and everybody can truly access the funding. So look, you take the win that you can get. $50 million is a huge step in the right direction. That is a win. We shouldn't block it because it's not enough, right? But that's something I will say about Arizona. And one last thing about Arizona is that it's not heavily regulated. You don't want to replicate the problems that are happening with the public schools and all the red tape and mimicking that and putting it onto the private sector. You don't want to do that. So one thing I would avoid, which they do in Arizona, they don't have any testing requirements. Schools test because they want to attract customers, so they have an incentive to show proficiency without the government telling them to. But if you are going to test, some other states like Florida do this where – the private schools, a lot of them are already, most of them, I mean, maybe 99% of private schools are already testing in some way, but they might not be taking your specific state test. And so if you're going to have some testing, don't require one specific state mandated test. Let the schools pick a norm reference test so you can compare things and so families can compare providers. If you have to make that concession to have testing, at least let the schools choose. Do not overburden the private schools by saying that they have to surrender their admissions processes over to the state. You don't want to do that either. You want to allow them to be private, allow them to have their discipline policies, allow them to have a mission and to cultivate an experience for the students based on that mission. So
love it. Yeah, love it, Corey.
We're coming up
on a break. We're going to continue our conversation. If you're just joining us, we are having a conversation with Corey DeAngelis. He is the executive director of the Educational Freedom Institute. He is an incredible voice nationwide for school choice, affectionately known as a school choice evangelist. But we have some big news here in the state of North Dakota, and that is Governor Burgum again addressing the legislators, saying he wants to see some educational savings accounts added to the budget. It's a game changer. It's a game changer. Corey, on the other side of the break, I want to talk about outcomes. You had mentioned it just briefly, but I think this is, for our listeners, probably one of the greatest things that we can share is there has been states that have done this, and for, as you had mentioned, Arizona for a decade has had educational savings accounts. So there's a track record of what this does to outcomes, and that's what I'd like to visit about on the other side of the break. Stick with us here on the Steve Hallstrom Show for our conversation, continuing with Corey DeAngelis on the other side of the break. It is 4:35 here on this Wednesday afternoon. This is Andrew Sletton sitting in for Steve. Thank you, Steve, again for the opportunity to sit behind the microphone on this busy news day here in North Dakota, also nationwide. Invite you to join in on the conversation. Give us a call on the Valley Christian Counseling phone line at 701-271-1100, or you can text your comments to 701-237-1590 and invite you to share your thoughts and maybe concerns or questions about Governor Burgum's address today. I heard a lot of great things. I, again, was very impressed with his delivery, his substance, and I feel like he made some incredible points that we're going to get to a little later on in the show. But for now, we are talking about what he proposed in his budget, and that is to have educational savings accounts for the parents and for the students of North Dakota, a huge game changer. And there was an interim committee this last summer that did meet, and they have started to mark up some bills, I believe, on what they want this educational savings account to look like. And hope, again, that Corey, our guest, can have some insight into some of that. But if you're just joining us, we are visiting with Corey DeAngelis. He is the executive director of the Educational Freedom Institute, also author of The Parent Revolution, a book you can purchase speaking about school choice. And he has been, again, a leading voice nationwide in this discussion. So, Corey, thank you again for joining us. And before the break, we had talked about, and you had mentioned briefly, what measurements look like, I should say outcomes look like. And I think we all agree that education should be about one thing, and that is kids and their preparation to be productive citizens. It's more than just preserving institutions or ways of life for teachers unions. There's so much to this conversation, but really it boils down to this, is what is best for our students. So I would like to ask from your experience and what you have seen across the country about measuring outcomes after educational savings accounts are enacted, what does that look like for outcomes for students? And you can pick any state, you can go any direction with this, but I think this is an important conversation for all of us to hear.
Yeah, look, school choice is a rising tide that lifts all boats, and we have plenty of data from Florida. Florida, a couple decades ago, didn't have school choice, and they were at the bottom of the pack on the nation's report card, the National Assessment of Educational Progress. And since they've expanded school choice, they've jumped to the top handful of states after adjusting for student demographics across states. So Florida has skyrocketed as they've expanded school choice because of competition. When families can vote with their feet and they can take their money somewhere else, the public schools up their game in response to that competition. They do a better job. They start to become more rigorous on their academics, but they also focus more on the basics. I mean, families care about a lot of things. They care about academics, but they also want schools to focus on math, reading, and writing. And more recently, we've seen the schools focusing on cultural topics, divisive topics. And even in states that ban these divisive topics, my home state of Texas, we banned CRT, for example. We've seen on videos from an organization called Accuracy in Media. They do undercover journalism, and it's great work. We've seen the administrators of the system admitting that they'll still teach it anyway, and they'll just do it in kind of different ways. They'll change definitions. They'll call it social-emotional learning. And it's a never-ending game of whack-a-mole trying to figure out how to fix the system from the top down. Doesn't mean we shouldn't try, but we also need bottom-up accountability with people being able to vote with their feet. And so in Florida, this isn't a money thing. It's not because they spent a lot more. They actually spend 27% less than the national average.
Wow.
Per student. So you can throw billions of dollars at the problem and still fail to get better. And we've done this in the United States.
Right.
We've increased spending by 164% in this country since 1970 after adjusting for inflation, but the outcomes haven't gotten 164% better. They've actually gotten worse. And we now spend about $20,000 per year nationally in the public schools. That's 52% higher than average private school tuition, and they get worse results in the government sector. And I'm not blaming the teachers. There's a lot of teachers that are doing a good job in the system,
right.
But the unions often exist to protect the lowest common denominator. And that money, that increase in spending nationally, teacher salaries have only gone up since 1970 by about 3% in real terms. Like, the teachers, when they complain about not having the money for the supplies and having to pay out of pocket for that kind of stuff, I actually feel for them. But the problem isn't with their competition. The problem is with their employer many, many times, mm-hmm. that has no incentive to spend money wisely. And so Florida's taken great strides. We have 29 studies on this subject nationwide, not just in Florida. 26 of the 29 find positive effects, more school choice, better outcomes in public schools. We have a whole bunch of other research, like looking at things like a couple of my first studies, peer-reviewed, have looked at the Milwaukee program, finding getting more school choice led to a reduction in crime by the time the students were 20 to 30 years of age later on in life. And that used student-level data, peer-reviewed article, rigorous study, two of them actually. Another one I did found a 38% reduction in paternity disputes, which could be caused by out-of-wedlock births and teenage pregnancies. And so school choice is important for academics, and most people focus on that, but it's also important for, one, parents getting more of an active role in their kids' lives, getting more of a say in their child's education, being able to direct the upbringing of their children, but also parents have more on-the-ground knowledge about how to get these decisions right. They know their kids more than anybody else, and they care about their kids certainly more than bureaucrats sitting in offices hundreds of miles away. But these choices that they make, they'll improve test scores, but they'll also improve these other outcomes, like reducing crime, being able to graduate from high school, being more of an active citizen. And there's another peer-reviewed meta-analysis on this by Patrick Wolf out at the University of Arkansas. He pulled all the studies together and found that when you're looking at civic outcomes of school choice, whether you volunteer in the community, whether you're engaged in the political process, whether you're an active citizen, that has increased civic outcomes as well in a statistically significant way. So
absolutely,
it's a win-win solution. And I'm glad that Governor Burgum made this announcement today. We have the votes in both chambers. North Dakota is going to join the party, and we just got to make sure that bill empowers as many families as possible.
Absolutely. What I say often about this conversation, and ever since COVID, what I have said is that the silver lining of COVID has been this school choice discussion. And you could probably tell us from 2020 until now, the number of states that have enacted this is staggering. Yeah. And I have said this for the last couple of years, but North Dakota is so far behind the game, and we're catching up now, but I hope that this will get to the finish line in something that is substantial for families. And ultimately, we want this, what's best for our students. And I don't think there's any metric that you could argue saying that this is not what's best for our students going forward. And so I appreciate the time, Corey, and your insight. And how can people find out more? If they want to find out more about this school choice discussion, where's a place they can go? Any resources you could share with our listeners?
Yeah, you can follow me on X. It's at DeAngelis Corey. I provide updates, including the one about North Dakota today. It's at DeAngelis Core. You can also get a copy of my book. It's on sale right now on Amazon. It's called The Parent Revolution. It was endorsed by President Trump, endorsed by Pete Hegseth. It's been endorsed by Vivek. And it's a national bestseller now. And it has Ted Cruz's endorsement. He said on the back of the book, you'll find that you can ruin Randy Weingarten's day by reading this book. I do talk about how the unions really overplayed their hand and showed conservative parents in particular why they need school choice. So,
well, this is a conservative issue.
Check it out.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, Corey, for the time today. Again, this is Corey DeAngelis, and he is the executive director of the Educational Freedom Institute. Corey, have a great afternoon. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
What a great conversation. Was looking forward to that, and I my mind is just spinning, and want to give you some of my thoughts on this on the other side of the break. If you're just joining us, this is Andrew Sletten sitting in for Steve Hallstrom on this Wednesday afternoon. Feel free to call in 701-271-1100 and join in on the conversation. It is 10 before 5 o'clock here on this Wednesday afternoon. Andrew Sletten sitting in for Steve Hallstrom. Having a great discussion, and just finished up our talk with Corey DeAngelis, and encourage you, if you're able, to go back and listen to that conversation, go back to the show archives and hear that. But I've followed Corey for quite a while on Twitter, and I have seen his passion and his, I would say, effectiveness in leading this school choice discussion. It was an honor to be able to talk about this in the state of North Dakota with him. And I have some thoughts I would like to share with you, and I encourage everybody to call in and let your voice be heard, not just on this, but in the next hour, we're going to visit a little bit more about some of the other things that Governor Burgum proposed. We have seen income tax reduction that was discussed in his budget address. Property taxes was addressed. In fact, he called out a park board, and he didn't name it by name, but Addison, do you just have a guess which park board he was maybe calling out in his budget address?
Oh, you've really pinned me here. No well, good guesses, at least.
Well, I would venture to say it's a park board named Fargo. So he made some interesting points, I think, that are very valid, and would love to hear your thoughts on that. We're going to talk a little bit about the property tax discussion as well. But school choice, you know, if you've listened to the show and you've heard me fill in for Steve, you probably heard me talk about this, and you're maybe bored with the conversation. But to me, it's a big deal. And you may ask the question, well, like, well, why, Andrew, is it a big deal? To me, it's a big deal for a multitude of reasons. One is it has become in many ways a moral issue with our children. And I would just say the indoctrination of our children in government schools. And we have a lot of incredible teachers and school districts, but we live in a city that has openly defied not only state law, but I would say openly defied parents. And as a parent myself with four kids under the age of 15, it's a big deal to me. And to many families who would desire to have their children educated somewhere else, but are unable to, whether it's because of their economic condition or just status in life, they're not able to send their kids to a school other than a public school. And maybe a public school to some of our listeners is your best option. Again, there's some incredible schools. Don't get me wrong. But I think what Corey had mentioned is that rising tide that lifts all boats is exactly what I feel in this discussion. Competition is good in every area. So business I'm in here in town is the Window and Door Store. We're also launching, just a little shameless plug here, Addison, we're launching the Bathroom Store. We are getting into bathroom remodels. Our Bismarck Market has been doing it for the last 5 years, but here in Fargo, we are going and have been engaged in bathroom remodels. Forgive the name. The Bathroom Store is maybe not the best branding, but it is what it is.
You think I can buy a whole bathroom at the Bathroom Store?
I mean, you sure could. We could show you some options. Would love to show you some options. So yeah,
I'd hope I could be able to get some special financing considering what I do when you fill in.
Absolutely. Give us a call, 701-205-0110. Anyway, shameless plug for the Window and Door Store and the Bathroom Store. I was going somewhere with that. Now I completely lost my train of thought, Addison. Competition. So competition is good. Like, I love to be able to go into a home, meet with a homeowner, and just have the conversation about what they want, what they need, and, you know, tell them we work with a variety of window manufacturers. And so when it comes to window replacement, it's not a one size fits all deal. We have more than one window line, and we have that on purpose because we know that not every home is going to fit, let's just say, a basic white vinyl window. There are opportunity for fiberglass windows and for wood windows. Listen, what you want, you can get in the window business. And so we have adopted that approach at the Window and Door Store because we understand competition is good. It's good in all aspects, in my opinion, of industry and the economy. It's also good in education. It's just a simple fact. But it seems to me that this topic, or I should say this industry, if you want to call it an industry, the school systems and the educational systems have been almost off limits when it comes to this competition discussion. Well, ladies and gentlemen, that's changed around the country. That topic has changed. That ship has sailed, so to speak. There is and has been many states that have enacted incredible school choice legislation, and I hope and I pray that it happens here in North Dakota because competition is good. And really, again, why I'm so passionate about it is it's about producing outcomes for students. And I think Corey did a great job of explaining it's more than just academic standards. It's life standards. It's being able to produce citizens that are productive members of society, that are able to lead their families, lead their communities, lead themselves well, and have a confidence in that they are created on purpose and for purpose. Listen, and that starts in the home. That starts with parents, you and I, instructing our children in these ways. But we know that teachers and school systems and the curriculum that are studied, it does have a huge impact in the trajectory of a child's life. And so education, I mean, we can talk day and night about how important it is, but I just want us to all seriously consider what a robust school choice program would do for the state of North Dakota. I mean, it's to me, it is the issue of this legislative session. I've already contacted several of my legislators, and I hope that you will contact your legislators about it as well and make your voice heard and say, we want to see some school choice legislation coming out of this next legislative session. Now, I don't know what it's going to look like. I mean, Governor Burgum, he said that there would be a $50 million allocation in his budget on top of the K-12 budget. So what that seems like to me is that he is proposing in the budget. Of course, this is all going to get changed and marked up through the Legislative Assembly. And so there's a lot of work left to do before this gets to the finish line. But to me, what he is saying, and I think it's a good sell in some ways, in that there would be no funds taken from the K-12 budget. There would be, in addition, $50 million given to support the educational savings account. Listen, we're rolling in money. And if there's an investment we need to make, let's say we don't take one dime from K-12 education, but we invest an additional $50 million into educational savings account, that's a great start. And this is what, you know, I mean, to any truth-loving person, you're going to recognize, like, the proof is in the pudding. And if we see results and if it begins to impact children positively, which all the other states that have enacted this have proven that it does do that, then let's expand the program. And I would say let's do something drastic to start. Governor Burgum said it. It's a way that North Dakota can set ourselves apart, even from some other states. I mean, this is a workforce issue. This is a family issue. This is a business issue. If parents are deciding about where to send, or I should say where to build a business or to live from state to state, and they come to the state of North Dakota, which has a robust school choice program, you better believe it's going to be a game changer. And so I would love to have this conversation with you. Give us a call, 701-271-1100, or text in your comments, 701-237-1590. Join us in the 5 o'clock hour for more talk on Governor Burgum and some other nationwide headlines. You don't want to miss those conversations on the other side of the break. Welcome to the 5 o'clock hour of the Steve Hallstrom Show. This is Andrew Sletten sitting in for Steve on this Wednesday afternoon. And it is dark. Addison, when did it get? It just got dark, like instantly.
Yeah, it's kind of weird. It gets dark way earlier.
Yeah,
as it does this time of year.
Yeah, I just looked up, not even, you know, looking out the window for a few minutes. I look up, oh my goodness, the 5 o'clock traffic is busy here on I-29. If you've never been to the Flag Studio, the beautiful studio here in South Fargo, and it's busy. I know everyone heading home from work. Thank you for tuning in this Wednesday afternoon, and thank you to Steve for letting me fill in today. And we have been having some discussions. We'd love for you to join in at 701-271-1100. Call into the studio on the Valley Christian Counseling phone line and let your voice be heard. Tell us what your thoughts are, whether it's on any topic we've discussed, school choice or Governor Burgum, or we're going to get into here later this hour one of the biggest national headlines. I believe it's a watershed moment for gender transition procedures. There is a argument. There's arguments happening right now in the Supreme Court and happening today, I should say, on challenging a gender transition law in Tennessee where they were blocking puberty blockers and transitioning for minors. A majority of states, 26 states, have passed similar legislation. And this is the first one to show up in the Supreme Court. And it's a big deal. It's going to be a big precedent going forward, whatever the Supreme Court decides as far as the interpretation, what the law and what they're arguing today. And I said I was going to get into it later, but I'll just give you a little snippet now. But what they're arguing today is essentially how is classification for sex and gender listed in our law? Meaning, are we able to classify and put as a protected class those, again, in a transgender situation? Because it would affect, obviously, medical care. And so this discussion is it's a sobering one. State of North Dakota last legislative session did pass some legislation that was similar to the state of Florida and others who banned puberty blockers. And I think it's well, we're going to get into it and would love to hear your thoughts on it. 701-271-1100. Another article I wanted to hit on a little later in the hour is an article coming out of the UK. And the nation of England, they have passed a law just here recently that legalized assisted suicide. And it's caused some really big blowback and some discussion about what this looks like. And I have some clips I want to share with you on that. And if we get to it, I also want to visit a little bit about the Biden pardon and not what you've heard probably since it's happened. But I did hear something staggering from Chuck Todd. You're going to want to listen to this clip. I don't agree often with Chuck Todd, but this discussion or this comment that he made on the Biden pardon, I think, is really staggering. And but before we get to that, wanted to cover a little bit more of Governor Burgum's budget address. And if this bores you, I apologize. I'm kind of a budget nerd. I'm kind of a state legislature nerd. And if you know, I'm just a pastor, business guy, here in town, parent, don't really, I have some stakes in the game, obviously, but for me, I do find how much the activities happening in Bismarck affect my life. And I, in a small state like North Dakota, I'm very appreciative that we can have a close touch of government to us. And so I think it's a big deal, to pay attention to what's going on in the halls of Bismarck. And so anyway, if you missed it today, Governor Burgum did address the legislators and laid out a few things. He laid out some funding for workforce development. I know the legislature is going to be tackling that. He laid out some funding for tax relief, and that's what I want to get into now. Addison, if you can cue up cut number 7. And in the property tax discussion, Governor Burgum, he makes a pretty strong case. I don't know if I agree with his sentiments all the time around property tax and what the state of North Dakota can do for that. I think his take is that the state's hands are really just tied. There's not much they can do because it's all local political subdivisions that handled the spending. And he makes an interesting point here on property tax in the budget discussion. Check this out. Cut number 7.
Has that helped lower property taxes? No. We've picked up a bigger share. Some other group is deciding how to spend it. They buy dinner. We pick up the tab. County social services, direct assistance at other little subdivisions, municipalities, counties, townships. If we're calling it relief, we're taking the taxes from one part of our state, like the oil-producing region, and sending it to another. If we're doing tax relief for people that aren't working, we're taking income taxes from people at work and giving it to people that may not be working. It's a transfer of these subsidies from rural areas to urban areas, because if you want to do tax relief on property tax, where's most of the property tax? It's in the large metro areas. Some of those large metro areas have got things like park boards that have spent more money, you know, on buildings than any of our universities have without a vote. You folks would never hear approve a $120 million athletic facility at any one of our 11 universities and say fine without a vote, but we got park districts that are doing that. So I'm just going to challenge all of you right now to just, hey, pump the brakes a little bit here and actually ask yourself, we don't need this so-called relief. We don't need to be providing more subsidies. If we do anything, it's got to be reform. And one thing you can do, because income taxes are uniform across the whole state, property taxes vary by every city, by every county. And even in your districts, I would challenge most of you, in your district, property tax is not the same, even in the same communities within your district. So I have not yet seen a proposal that allows us to do something that isn't largely unfair when it's just a redistribution of money. So the legislature can't fix this problem with a blanket approach. Property taxes are set at the local level by local decision makers. Current and past proposals to eliminate and reduce property taxes have simply been redistribution schemes, using tax money from one group of taxpayers to pay another's bills. And we know, because of what we hear, it for many parts of our state, it has not effectively lowered property taxes.
What are your thoughts on that? I found Governor Burgum to be, in this address, it seemed like the gloves were off a little bit. And, you know, rightfully so. I mean, he's only got a couple of days left in office. And so the reality is, with Governor Burgum's budget address, is, you know, the legislature is going to do what they want to do. And Governor Burgum's not going to be there to either sign it or veto it. A lot of it's going to be at what Governor-elect Armstrong decides that he would like to see in the budget. In some ways, this discussion is a little premature, but I do love that he is just making a case for what he feels is best. Now, I do know, and I believe that Governor Burgum is an innovator. I think that he does think in ways that are for efficiency and less government involvement in our life. In many ways, I would say that that's true. But what I find interesting about the property tax deal that he brought up is he brought up the Fargo Park Board, and he didn't name it. He didn't say it was the Fargo Park Board, but, you know, $120 million athletic facility, I don't think has been built in any other state or city, I should say, besides Fargo. The City of Fargo Park Board spent $126 million and more on the Fargo Parks. I don't even know what they call it. It's down south, the Fargo Parks Sports Center complex. It's a beautiful facility. It's huge, but he's right. There wasn't one vote taken to spend $126 million, and that's a direct impact in our property tax dollars. I encourage you to go and look at your property tax statement and see where the money is actually going. And, you know, the city of Fargo has been kind of the target for many of the arrows that we're, you know, a lot of people are throwing at managing property tax, but Fargo Park Board is a culprit. And so he calls it out, and I think in a way that is, it's an easy argument to make. And so his focus is income tax. And we're going to look at that on the other side of the break. We're bumping up against a break here, but I wanted to share a little bit about what he is proposing in income tax relief, and want to hear from you. You can call in the Valley Christian Counseling phone line, 701-271-1100, or text your comments to 701-237-1590. You can also email the studio at studio@flagfamily.com. Again, this is Andrew Sletton sitting in for Steve on this Wednesday afternoon. It is 520 here on the Steve Hallstrom Show in Addison with the great bumper music. Thank you for that.
I try.
And thank you, everyone, for tuning in this afternoon. And I have a couple of articles I want to get to, just some stuff around the nation and the world that we'd love to get your perspective on and share my thoughts on the Supreme Court argument, like I mentioned, that's happening today. It's called the United States versus Scrimeti, and it is a law that's being challenged out of the state of Tennessee regarding gender transition surgery, and basically what that transition, gender transition procedure, do's and don'ts are. And it's a watershed, again, moment for the nation in that many states, over 26 states, have dealt with some type of legislation around gender transition and what really, you know, we think is acceptable in this area. And so it's going to be an interesting discussion. But I wanted to, before we get to that, talk also about Governor Burgum's income tax relief. Now, in the address that Governor Burgum had, he talked about quite a few things that the state should focus on. And we, as the state of North Dakota, we have seen some income tax relief over the last session. And I think he makes some good points here. So, Addison, we're going to go to cut eight, but he proposed a budget that includes the tax relief that was included last session, but he's still making a strong case for the elimination of income tax. I think Measure 4 like wounded me forever about talking property tax elimination, but income tax elimination. This is what Governor Burgum said in his address today.
As these funds grow, we should absolutely continue down the path, taking steps, including in this legislature, to just incrementally moving our way to become the 10th state with no individual income tax. When we do that, thank you. The thing we need is workforce in our state. And if you tax income tax, you're taxing workforce. Energy states have figured this out. Texas, Wyoming, and Alaska all have zero income tax. Our neighbor, South Dakota, zero income tax. These are states that we compete directly with for workforce. On our military bases, people that may get assigned to Grand Forks or Minot, when they sign up, they don't sign up to become a North Dakota citizen. They sign up to become a Texas citizen, even if they're deployed here, because they pick a state that has zero income tax. Real tax relief. Real tax relief. That means actually reducing the taxes collected. It doesn't mean redistributing somebody's taxes to somebody else and then calling it relief. It means actually reducing the revenue. We keep the money in the hands of the citizens. And that's a goal that's worth pursuing every day. And with our financial success, you have an opportunity here to continue to take us down that path.
I, again, feel like this is a gloves off Governor Doug Burgum. He's just really making a case for the elimination of our income tax. And I would love to hear your thoughts on this. Income tax, again, versus property tax. There is, I heard, over 40 bills drafted about property tax relief or reform. And it's going to be an interesting legislative session in what are the priorities of income tax relief versus property tax reform. Something's going to have to give in one of those places. And all of what he just said, I don't disagree with at all. I do think it is a workforce issue. If we are competing with other states, we need to make North Dakota as appealing as possible. And as my conversation with Corey DeAngelis in the first hour showed, is that red states have moved the needle in many areas since 2020. We live in a different world than before COVID. And that's just the reality. I know we're all kind of sick of talking about it, but it is the reality. Many things have changed. And not only what we discuss, the school choice discussion, but when it comes to taxes, when it comes to what makes a family decide to move from, let's say, a state like Arizona or Florida to North Dakota, it's got to be more than just an increase in wages. There has to be more appeal that we as the state give to somebody to move here. And because we need it, we need workforce. We have grown, but we haven't grown substantially enough to cover all of the open positions, and it's an issue for just stagnation when it comes to growth. I know some realtors here in town that they have interest in from larger companies, nationwide companies to come to Fargo to open a restaurant and other retail, but they aren't doing it because they know that the workforce just can't handle it. There's not enough people to fill the positions. And so they don't bring what we would call economic impact to a city like Fargo because we just don't have the people. We don't have the bodies. And so how can we make it appealing? I think there needs to be, this is just my Andrew Sletton opinion, a huge investment this legislative session into the citizens of North Dakota, and in turn will open the eyes of people who are wanting to move here and saying, you know what, North Dakota cares about its citizens. Income tax, property tax, school choice. I mean, those are my top three areas that I believe the legislature can tackle to give us, I would say, a step ahead of our state just right to the south. I know we have some listeners from South Dakota. We are competing, as Governor Burgum said, head to head with the state of South Dakota for workers, for people. And I'd love to hear from you on this. I mean, you know, if you're a business owner and you're trying to find employees, this is a challenge. If you're a parent and you're upset about the direction of, let's say, the Fargo Public School Board, you know, these areas are a challenge. How can we, as a state, make it the most appealing state for somebody to move to? And the city of Fargo and Moorhead, we live in an incredible area. There's such great people here. And, you know, in every area you live, of course, you're going to have some challenges. But we'd love to hear from you. Give us a call on the Valley Christian Counseling phone line, 701-271-1100, or you can text in your comments at 701-237-1590. Texter says, Governor Burgum wasn't shy about getting tax incentives for the million-dollar condos he builds downtown and for businesses. His 15-year pilot and 25 years of tax increment financing. At what time do those incentives stop for those big businesses when we as homeowners are hung out to pay, pay, pay? Great comment. Thank you for sharing. Another texter just simply said, eliminate income and corporate tax. I agree. I mean, we are in the position statewide with our budget, with the reserves and the funds that we have to this next. And Governor Burgum said it again, to his credit, whether you're a Burgum fan or not, to his credit, he, I think, made a compelling case for the legislature, and he told them that you have an opportunity to do something that is unlike any other session has done before. And to me, that opportunity is to bring the relief that every family is needing in this inflation era and time where a lot of families are really just struggling to put food on the table. Everything costs more. You know, I mentioned earlier, I'm in the window and door business. We're starting to get all of the emails about increases in prices for 2025. Listen, I wish I could say our window costs have gone down. They have not gone down. They've gone up substantially since COVID. And I'm just waiting for the email to say, oh yeah, we've lowered our price. Well, that hasn't happened. And families are feeling it in all aspects. And so the state, while we're loaded with money, has tried, and I think they're feeling the pressure. Citizens are getting fed up. You and I are getting fed up with just the talk. We need to see this next legislative session some real, meaningful relief. Whether it's income tax being eliminated completely, let's do it. Educational savings accounts, let's do it. Let's make it real. Let's make it something that we, as an investment, into not only our children, but into the workforce here in North Dakota. Thank you so much for tuning in. We do have a break here at the bottom of the hour. On the other side of the break, stick with us. Want to talk again about the Supreme Court conversations today. They're having some oral arguments on a watershed case, and it's a huge, momentous discussion that's happening, and you don't want to miss that conversation coming up on the other side of the break here on the Steve Hallstrom Show. Feel free to call in on the Valley Christian Counseling phone line, 701-271-1100. They're incredible people over at Valley Christian Counseling, and thank them for their sponsorship of the phone line. And also text line, 701-237-1590. Feel free to text in any comments and thoughts. Thank you to those who have engaged in the show so far. This segment, I do want to just deal with a couple of articles that you may have missed, and just want to bring you up to speed on some of the talking points of the day in terms of culture. And if I would, I would say, have a passion personally, it's to see how a biblical worldview plays out in our modern day culture. And so sometimes you see articles and headlines that are staggering. And I want to bring a couple of articles to you today. Just in, within the last couple of days, the nation of England, the UK, has voted to legalize assisted suicide. Now, this is staggering. And I want to bring to you, this made its way over to the United States of America in the House of Representatives. Speaker Mike Johnson, he had a comment that he made on it, and I applaud him for this. He didn't have to make this statement, but I think as a point of personal privilege, he made it during a press conference. And Addison, that's cut four, if you could get that ready. Listen to what Speaker Johnson said about the law that was just passed in the UK.
Let me just make a word about something that this happened overseas that should be getting all of our attention. Just a point of personal privilege. Last Friday was a sad and shameful day for the English-speaking world. Why? That's because the UK Parliament voted to legalize euthanasia in their whole nation. It's an ancient truth that medicine should always heal and never harm. But the UK just joined Canada in twisting that definition of medicine and codifying the Orwellian language of assisted death into law. I just want to say this. America has always stood out as a beacon, as a shining city on a hill. We've stood out in this regard. Our declaration makes the bold proclamation, the acknowledgement, that life is a gift from our Creator. Our founders called it a self-evident truth, that all of us are made equally by our Creator, and that He's the one that gives us our rights. And any society that rejects that truth about life as a gift from our Creator and adopts a culture of death is a society that is in the process of crumbling. So-called assisted death endangers the weak and marginalized in a society, and it corrupts medicine, and it erodes our obligations to family. And I hope and pray that the people of the United Kingdom will work through democratic means and reverse that legislation. As Speaker of this House in the U.S., I want to say that House Republicans are committed to rejecting socialized medicine and the nanny state, and we will promote and respect every life, no matter how old or sick or weak those persons may be.
Amen, Speaker Johnson. When I was reading through a couple of articles about this assisted suicide legislation, I found this. The faith leaders in the UK included Catholic, Muslim, Hindu, Orthodox, Greek Orthodox. They all issued a joint letter last week opposing the bill. And I want this to settle in a little bit to our mind about what they said. They said it this way, is that there is a danger in unintended consequences of legislation like this. And I completely agree. They say it this way, that there has been assisted suicide legislation passed in places like Oregon and Canada. And some of those consequences that have happened, we can see clearly. And I just want us to realize that all of the faith leaders in the UK came out against this legislation, and yet it still passed. What does that say about the condition of our culture? We have become very, very secular, and the further away we get from a biblical worldview, and I would just say it in a pursuit of truth, the more secular our governments get, this is what we're left with. And so even the debate that we're going to get into here in a minute about the gender transition care, I want us to just keep in mind that we are having some very serious debates. One of the unintended consequences of this assisted suicide is in the marginalized and vulnerable community. Think about this for a minute. And this is what they said in the letter, and the faith leaders, when they submitted this letter in opposition to the bill. They said, even when surrounded by loving family and friends, people towards the end of their life can still feel like a burden. This is especially the case while adult social care remains underfunded. In this environment, it is easy to see how a, quote, right to die could all too easily end in feeling you have a, quote, duty to die. We know this. These consequences are, they're irreversible. They're staggering. And when we don't value life, which is the end result of a worldview without God, when we don't value life, these are the bills and legislations that we're left with. This is why, ladies and gentlemen, you have to get involved in making your voice heard. We know, this is my soapbox, we know as Bible-believing Christians, and maybe you're not a Bible-believing Christian, maybe you know you're of a different faith, but you appreciate those Judeo-Christian values that have made the Western world what it is. I implore you to make your voice heard and speak out in these areas, especially in regards to life, because this article goes hand in hand a little bit with the one I have teased a little bit earlier, and that is the Supreme Court arguments happening today. There's a state being brought to the Supreme Court, the state of Tennessee. They passed a law their last session that challenged the gender transition procedures. Now, I want you to notice this. This language around gender transitioning is very important. If you pull up a news headline from CNN or MSNBC or another one of the mainstream media, kind of left-leaning outlets, what you'll see in the phraseology here, Addison, is you'll see gender-affirming care with certain demographic, but other news sites that you'll go to that would be, we would say, more conservative, they would call it gender transition procedures. You see, gender affirming care is a phrase that is trying to paint this care, as they call it, into something that it's not. And I'm telling you, this discussion is going to be a moment that is going to either make or break each state in their legislation when it comes to what we as citizens and legislatures think is allowable when it comes to minors and gender transition. Addison, if we can go to cut five, this is from the Supreme Court arguments today. This is Justice Alito making a comment. I want you to hear what he says in his comment about suicide in particular and studies that have come out saying that these procedures do not change the suicide rate among those experiencing gender dysphoria. Listen to this from Justice Alito.
True in every respect, but on page 195 of the Cass report, it says there is no evidence that gender affirmative treatments reduce suicide.
What I think that is referring to is there is no evidence in the studies that this treatment reduces completed suicide. And the reason for that is completed suicide, thankfully and admittedly, is rare. And we're talking about a very small population of individuals with studies that don't necessarily have completed suicides within them. However, there are multiple studies, long-term longitudinal studies, that do show that there is a reduction in suicidality, which I think is a positive outcome to this treatment.
There have been many states, I shouldn't say states, countries in Europe. You can go and look up the number of countries in Europe that have banned gender transition surgeries for minors because, for one, lawsuits have been filed, and medically they're not willing to take the risk anymore to do a double mastectomy or a hysterectomy. Or you go down the list of things that will permanently alter children. I'm telling you, this issue... the other day at our Monday night prayer at Antioch Church, we prayed about this Supreme Court argument and decision. And the reason why it's such a big deal to me is there is an epidemic among our young people. And if you've never read the book, Irreversible Damage, I invite you to go right now and order it and read the book, Irreversible Damage. It will explain the phenomenon of this transgender craze that we're experiencing among especially our young teenage girls. And it lays out an incredible case about how this care, so to speak, that many would call care, is damaging lives forever. And on the other side of the break, I'm going to play a clip for you from an individual named Katie Lennon, who has been and did testify for the Tennessee law that's being debated in the U.S. Supreme Court right now. And she gives her testimony and she gives her story. And I want you to hear this. It's a tragic testimony about what this quote unquote care will do to a minor. So stick with us here on the Steve Hallstrom Show. More coming up on the other side of the break. It is 5:50 here on Wednesday afternoon. Thank you for tuning in to the Steve Hallstrom Show. Andrew Sletten sitting in for Steve. A couple of articles I want to get to at the end of the show here. The Supreme Court arguments happening today is the United States versus Scrimeti. It is the Tennessee gender transition bill that is being discussed. Now, the other side of the break, we had looked at what Justice Alito had pointed out, and he pointed out that a study showed that there was no difference in suicide numbers after these procedures. And I think that's very it's very important for us to consider, because if we want truth to lead our discussions, we have to be honest when what we think is going to happen doesn't actually happen. If we're honest enough to say, you know what, it's time to change course, that's what 26 states have done. 26 states have banned these gender transitioning procedures, and state of North Dakota has done it. And here in Tennessee, we see the law being argued that, you know, they, of course, the opponents want it overturned. And I know this is a hard issue, but listen to this story. There's this individual named Katie Lennon, and she has been a very outspoken testimony about detransitioning. And just listen to this clip. Listen to her story and consider with me the implications of what a surgery and what these puberty blockers will do to a young lady.
I'm a detransitioner, and I live in Lowell, but I work, worship, and do business in Nashua. And so I'm an active community member of the 603, and I'm here in support of SB 272 today. So like many children and teens today, I identified myself as transgender for years. And when I started to feel confused and ashamed about my developing body, I asked everyone in my life to call me by a new name and use male pronouns to refer to me. So in other words, I went through a social transition from female to male. Everyone in my life immediately affirmed my new identity, either out of full support for it or just to stay neutral and not cause any issues. But the constant affirmation, both active and passive, solidified me in my transgender identity. No one meant to lock me into an identity that would later leave me broken, ashamed, and more confused than before. They were really all just being nice. But the social transition eventually wasn't enough, and I soon felt I needed to take testosterone. And when that wasn't enough, I had a double mastectomy. And when that still wasn't enough, I had a total hysterectomy, including the removal of my uterus, cervix, fallopian tubes, and both ovaries. There's no point of contentment during a gender transition. We get fleeting moments of euphoria, but ultimately one step leads straight into the next. And I thought that in the end I could really become a man, but all I became was a mutilated and abused version of my old self. Social transition is a big deal, and we're lying when we say that any of this is reversible.
Social transition is a big deal, and we're lying when we say that any of this is reversible. Ladies and gentlemen, it's staggering. That testimony, when I heard it this afternoon when I was looking into what the Supreme Court was arguing, I came across Katie's testimony, and I'll tell you, it reeled me. I just want to ask the question, what about Katie? You know, to all of the proponents for these surgeries for minors, what about Katie's story? Taking puberty blockers, eventually leading to double mastectomy, eventually leading to a full hysterectomy, that's not reversible. It's irreversible damage. And because of this truth that suicides and mental health conditions do not increase on the other side of these surgeries, people don't get better is the point. The testimonies of detransitioners are, there's enough of them out there now where, again, we have to decide, are we going to continue to let the narrative of the culture push this agenda, or are we going to stand up and say, no, this is not, as a minor, something that we will allow, because, for one, there's a huge liability in the repercussions of this, but I just think morally, it's just wrong. It's just wrong. And I hope you get the sense of how passionate I am about this subject, and not throwing any stones at anyone who holds a different opinion on this. But know this, is there are stories like Katie's all over. And as a pastor, I deal with broken humanity every day. We're all broken humanity. We all got our issues. And, you know, when somebody is affirmed in a decision that will bring harm to them, that will never, ever be able to be corrected, I think that is something we should hold people accountable for. And in fact, in other places, again, I would say in truth, nations, maybe that's not the right word, in areas where truth is desired and followed, they see, okay, if the outcome is this, we need to stop the surgery. That's what countries in Europe, many countries have done, and many states are right on their heels. And but yet this discussion is still happening, and yet you'll pull up a headline from a mainstream news company and you'll see this gender affirming care discussion. And I'm telling you, this for minors, listen, if you're an adult and you can do whatever you want, but for children, I think we need to make sure that we are holding this standard and not letting them destroy their life for the rest of their life. Now, the last article I want to talk about kind of goes hand in hand with the last two I've discussed. And Addison, clip number three, we'll play quickly. This is Chuck Todd. And do we have time? Yeah. Okay, let's play clip three quick.
I follow the Hunter Biden trial very closely.
Mm-hmm.
I read every transcript, all the testimony, because that's what all that was made public. And there is, you want to get angry, just as somebody in just all these mixed emotions, you read the Hallie Biden transcript, and that's Beau's widow.
Yes.
And essentially he turned her into a crack addict. And this was all happening in 2017, 2018. And Joe and Jill Biden were so concerned about their family that they decided to run for president.
Yep.
So when you talk about the word selfish, it's almost like the word doesn't, I mean, their decision to run for president put the entire Democratic Party and the United States of America in the position that it's in now.
I don't agree with much of what Chuck Todd says, but I agree with him here when he says the selfishness of the Bidens to ignore the condition of their family just for the power of politics, I thought was a staggering statement. And it goes hand in hand with, what is our desire as a culture? Do we stand for life? Do we stand for truth over things like power and politics? And I hope that each and every one of us will. And I remember Dianne Feinstein, an image and video of her being rolled in to a vote in her old age. And I thought it was so staggering and sad. She should have been at home with her family, but instead she was being pushed in for a vote. Love you. Thank you for letting me be with you today. God bless.